Yes, I do. Father, I just want to ask you, where does the name Yerushalayim come from? Do you know?
Salem.
Right, Yerushalayim. In other words, where's that from?
The city of
Hashem Yireh, on this mount Hashem will be seen. That's what Abraham said, that that was with Abraham after the Akedat Yitzchak. On this mountain Hashem will be seen. Hashem sees and will be seen. Not always will be seen, but Hashem always sees there. So that's Yireh. And also Malchitzedek Melech Shalem. Shalem, Malchitzedek, king of Shalem. Shalem is Yerushalayim, is what we call Yerushalayim. So you've got a combination of Yireh and Shalem. Yeah? So you've got Yerushalayim. For this reason, you should, in the Tanakh, is Yerushalayim ever written with a yud between Yerushalayim, between the Lamed and the Mem? Never written. There's no yud. Why? Because we might pronounce it Yerushalayim, but it is actually Yerushalayim. There's a Tosfot like that. Rav Natan will know, you must probably mention it to the Talmidim. There's a Tosfot like that in Talmid. Actually, huh? Tosfot in Talmid, that the Tosfot says that, that that's the reason. So he says like this, Vayir ayani kra kfar shalem. Malchitzek Melech Shalem, Nikra Yushalayim, Al Shem Yirev, Al Shem Shalem. Combination of the two. Lekach ein anu notnim Yud be Yushalayim, Bein Lamed Lamem. So never in the Tanakh will you find a Yud between, it's never written there. Because it's Yerushalayim, it's not Yerushalayim. We call it Yushalayim. By the way, why do we call it Yushalayim? If it's really Yerushalayim, why do we call it Yushalayim?
That's a big question.
Huh?
Very good question.
How did the Yud get in there?
How did the Yud come in there? No? What would you think? Why Yerushalayim?
Why Dafka there? I mean...
You know, it's why Yerushalayim? If it's really Yerushalayim, so why would we call it Yerushalayim? Tell me, what is this?
Yad.
Ozen, Oznai. So what does that show you?
Two Jerusalems.
There are two Jerusalems. What is the Yerushalayim Shamala? Shamata of Yerushalayim Shamala. No, it's Shar HaShamayim. And this is the Shar HaShamayim, Hashem says. And that was when Yaakov says, Ein Zekim Beit Elokim. And this is the gate to heaven. You've got Yerushalayim Shamala, whatever that means. Whatever that means. Opposite, whatever that means, directly above, you know, as they joined. Yerushalayim Hashem, as it were, concentration of Hashem, or the divine presence of Pamalei Shamala, divine retinue, above Yerushalayim. We'll say it like that. That's why Unculus translates it, Manura Makoma Zeh. You know Unculus? You know the translation of Unculus? Unculus? You've seen a Chumash, right? Well, everyone's seen a Chumash. But you know the translation of Unkelus. So he translates, Manura makom hazeh, how awesome is this place. Ma dechilu makom adain. How dechilu is Lashon Rabim. It doesn't say dechil. Awesome, he says dechilu. They're both together. Awesome. Yerushalayim is an awesome place. You know, it's because it's Shara Shamayim, the gateway to heaven. In fact, I used to once tell a joke, you must probably heard about it. Nachon, you must probably heard the joke with the telephones.
The direct line, right.
Direct line, in other words, you know that, right?
I'm not sure, maybe.
That once there was a reporter that went to interview Reagan. Let's speak going back to the time of Reagan.
Oh, right.
Okay, and he saw him sitting on a telephone, and they asked him, what are all these telephones? He says, well, this one is the hotline to Moscow. And he said, what is the white one? The white one is called to Shamayim. So he said, all right, let's hear you call. Shamam, let's see who gets. No, it's a terribly expensive call. It's a few million dollars just per second. Okay, and then he went to interview, who was it then, in those days, in Reagan's time in Russia. In Russia it was, what's his name? Brezhnev. Brezhnev in those days. So he went to, saw the same thing, asked the same questions. What is the white one? What is the red one? Hotline to Washington. What is the white one? This is the one to heaven. Well, let's hear you call. He said, no. Expensive, it's a few billion rubles over here. Anyway, finally came to Yerushalayim, I was interviewing Shamir in those days. I'm just putting everyone in their time period. And Yitzhak Shamir, and he said, he saw Shamir sitting on the white line, at the white line. He said, and he was talking and talking. And then he said, but hold on a second, isn't this the one to Shamayim? So he said, yes. I said, so what are you talking so much? Isn't it expensive? And in America, though, they said it was a few million dollars. And then Brezhnev over there said, what's a few billion rubles? What do you say? I said, no, Avi, that's a local call. That's a local call. Anyway, okay. So this is Yerushalayim. And Yom Yerushalayim is Yom Yerushalayim, which we're going to come to, is celebrating the reunification, or getting back Yerushalayim. But when you speak about Yerushalayim, really we really mean the old city. That's what we really mean. Now, Rav Natana wants me to speak a little bit about Yom Yerushalayim. Now, you must understand, you mean what we say in the tefillah in the morning? Bal milchamot, zorat tzedakot. Do you remember that? I'm not telling you. You'll find it for us. He knows this will do well. Huh? Does it make you a
tshuva?
So can you see Aviyah? Yeah, we've got. Can you see Aviyah, the language? We've got the language. You all remember this, right? Now, it says like this. Hashem is what is Bal Milchamot. Hashem in charge of wars, amongst other things, charge of peace as well. Says Shalom Bimromav. Hashem does peace, but Hashem does war if need be. Hashem directs the wars as well if need be. Zorat Tzedakot, what is Zorat Tzedakot? Zorah
plans
Tzedakot. And then it's Matzmiach Yeshuot. Hashem brings out, what is Yeshuot?
Salvation.
That's Hashem's forte. He knows how to do it. Hashem knows how to do it good. Bring a good Yeshua. That's Hashem's forte. So, Bal Milchamot, but what is the purpose of the Milchama? Not just to have a Milchama for a Milchama, but to have a Yeshua. Bal Milchamot, Zorat Tzedakot, Matzmiach Yeshuot. Hashem brings you, by the way, whatever I'm telling you is coming from good sources. This is an idea of Rav Kook, for instance. Right? Bal milchamot, zorat tzedakot, matzmiach yeshuot. If there's a milchama, Hashem's always got a good purpose for the milchama in the end. Yeah, the milchama, there might be suffering, it's true. But there won't be suffering for the sake of suffering. There's going to be a great Yeshua coming out of it. Now, this was what happened with going back to Milchemet Sheshet Hayamim. Now, Milchemet Sheshet Hayamim, you're going back to 1967, right? That's going back. Most of you boys weren't born yet. I don't even know if Rav Natana was born.
No.
1967, you weren't born. Yeah, it's as clear as day, 1967, you're going to understand what happened there, 1967. This is going back to, that's when Milchemet Sheshet Hayamim. First of all, you've got to remember what Yerushalayim was. What was Yerushalayim in those days? In 1967. Don't know? Where you are now in Kiryat Moshe, that was the end of Yerushalayim this side. In fact, there's a little airport You know, you've got, what is that big street that you've got going?
Kanfein Nesharim.
Kanfein Nesharim, what does that mean? Eagles?
Wings.
That actually was a little airport. There was a little airport over there. What used to come in that airport? Not much. Pipers. You know what a piper is? You know, piper planes? Do you know those things? Sometimes helicopters. But, you know, basically the pipers. Now, you heard of the name, the Piper. There was an aeroplane called a Piper. It's a small aeroplane. Anyway, that was the end of Yerushalayim on this side. And, well, on the other side, where was the other, let's say, going to the south? Where was the end of Yerushalayim on the south? We've got Katamon, where the yeshiva is. That was the end of Yerushalayim. In fact, that was the border. That was the border over there. You've got where the railway. I don't know, now they've got the Rakevet HaKala, but the old railway was passed. Half of it was in Jordan, so-called Jordanian territory. And then in the middle of town, you had a wall at the end of Rehov Yafo, a big wall, so that the Jordanians wouldn't shoot down Yafo Street, yeah? Because they were shooting down Jaffa Street. Now and again they were shooting. So they had the big wall. And a very small place, Yerushalayim. Very, very small place. Without the old city, obviously. In fact, it was totally divided there. The old city, you know, there were, I don't know if you boys know, towards the end of Jaffa Street, there's a monastery called Notre Dame. Do you boys know that? There's like a, anyway, sometimes, I'll tell you a little anecdote. You couldn't see the Kotel. The only way maybe you could see the Kotel Har HaBayit is if people went up into that monastery known as Notre Dame, they could look. That was a big view. In other words, it's very close to the Iratika, very close to the old city. And maybe you could see the Har HaBayit from there. But there's an anecdote that once one of the old nuns, one of the older nuns, you know, they have in a monastery, they have nuns. And one of the older nuns, she was leaning out the window, and it was over no man's land. You know, there was like barbed wire. You know what barbed wire is? Get a towel, how would you say barbed wire? Not like barbed wire. There was like the old city and there was like barbed wire, no man's land. And she was leaning out the window and a false teeth fell out, one of the nuns, and fell into no man's land. She was from Israel. Now she was in these, Notre Dame was in the Israeli side of the of Yerushalayim, and fell into no man's land, a false teeth. Fell into no man's land. And she wanted to get her false teeth back. So that she approached the... In those days they had Vadat Shvitat HaNeshek, Armistice Committee. So she had to contact the head of the Israeli side of the Armistice Committee. And he had to contact the liaison office from the United Nations. And he contacted the Jordanian thing, and the three of them went into Naaman, went through the barbed wire into Naaman's land to go and look for their false teeth, and they found it. They brought it back to her. So now, I'm just telling you that story so that you should know how small it was. Do you follow? Yerushalayim was very small. In fact, I don't know, very small. In fact, Mount Scopus, Haaretz Ophim, it was like a little pocket. You know what a pocket is? It was like a little enclave. Like, let's say this was Yerushalayim, and then there was a little, like, prozdor. It wasn't even a... There was, like, this was held by Israeli forces in the War of Independence, and by the Armistice Agreement, every month they could send, change the... Actually, police, but it was really soldiers, who were looking after... the Jewish things on Mount Scopus, the Israeli things on Mount Scopus, like the university, they had the university buildings and they had the hospital. Hadassah Hospital was an Oscopus. So every month you'd have new soldiers dressed up as policemen who'd go have a convoy, and that's all you had. It was a very small place. And then, all right, that's what we've got. Then on that, okay, very small place. Now they had Yom HaTzmaut. This was in the Yom HaTzmaut in 1967. They had the march. Remember the military march in Yerushalayim. In fact, in Sderot Herzl, there was like a military march not far from the Tachna Merkazit. Had like a military march in Sderot Herzl, and then that afternoon they heard, or we heard that in those days they had the president of Egypt called Nasser, Gamal Abdul, another name, Nasser, some other name which I forgot, but that he decided that he was moving into Sinai, moving the Egyptian army into Sinai, which was actually a demilitarized zone. In fact, the United Nations were looking after the Sinai as a demilitarized zone. Anyway, he told the United Nations to get out, and he moved in the Egyptian army into Sinai and closed what is called the Straits of Tiran. Straits of Tiran are straits that, I don't know if you know the map a little bit. You know the map? I'll tell you what, could you bring me section 2 of the encyclopedia? No, no, the yellow ones. The yellow ones.
The yellow ones here?
The yellow ones. Can you see? Bet. Up to the top. The top.
One more shelf up.
No, bet right there.
Bet, just take it out carefully. Can you get it?
Yeah.
Come, I'll just show you. Let me show you a little bit of a map. Have you ever seen a map of Eretz Yisrael? Now, the true map of Eretz Yisrael. Right, the true map goes from... Where does it go to, gentlemen? All right, but anyway... I don't see the Straits of Tiran. They haven't got it yet. On this side of East, that leads into the Persian, into the Gulf of Eilat. You know, you've got Eilat over here. Yeah, you've got the Straits of Tiran about, well, you go down, you've got about here, before the Suez. Okay, the Strait, by the way, you see this map? Where does Israel extend to?
Euphrates.
Well, that's right, the Euphrates, but where, how far north?
Damascus, isn't it?
Well, possibly, way past Damascus. Way past Damascus, where's Damascus? He has, he has Lebanon. Mm-hmm. He has, what have we got? You've got Lebanon. Damascus is more or less parallel. He has Damascus. Mm-hmm. Now, Israel extends to, I'd say, Turkey. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Yeah. It's a real map. This is Turus Amunus.
Wow.
This is Hora, and down south, maybe to the Nile, or maybe to Nachal El Arish. All right, a bit of a debate. Or the Nile. Rakun to Rashi, the Nile. Nachal Mitzray. All right. Now, I thought I'd have this on the map. You close those Straits of Tiran, which lead... Do you turn this, please? Thank you. which leads into the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Aqaba. He closed the Straits of Tiran, which he wasn't allowed to do by the armistice agreement after the Sinai campaign. All right, the Israelis pulled out of Sinai, forced by Eisenhower in those days. I don't know if you heard of these names. Have you heard of President Eisenhower?
Sure.
You heard of that name? All right, yeah, they were forced by President Eisenhower to pull out of Sinai. Ben Gurion was forced. But there's an armistice agreement, and by the armistice agreement, the Straits of Tiran, which straits, by the way, we mean that's a narrow passageway for ships, will never be closed. Do you follow? They can never be closed by the armistice. And if, yeah, that was part of the agreement. America would guarantee that. Egypt signed, and America guaranteed. Anyway, so he moved into the Sinai, closed the Straits of Tiran, and I might as well tell you, they were threatening now, the thing was, now they're coming to conquer Eretz Yisrael and either slaughter all the Jews or throw them into the sea, one of the two. One of the two. And together with Nasser, once Nasser made that move, so now from Damascus they also made the same thing. So I don't remember who was the president in those days. I don't remember. It was before Assad. And also, they started bombarding the Galil. And you must understand, there wasn't Ramat Golan. You didn't have the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights was in Syrian hands. And they started bombarding. Bombarding, I mean bombarding. And the only one undecided was Jordan. But then, you know, King Hussein of Transjordan. Now, he didn't know which was the winning side. He joined the winning side. That was his tactic. And he said, you know what? They're going to win the Arabs. He said, he also joined them. And they started also bombarding. Bombarding, this was already now. They started well, he didn't begin bombarding. It was basically Egypt causing the big trouble, and Syria causing the big trouble, and all 14 Arab nations, that's Lebanon and this other place, all saying they're supporting Egypt and Damascus and Syria and sending reinforcements and so on with their air forces, you know, the whole army is available. And as I told you, Jordan was undecided, didn't know which was the winning side, Israel or the Arabs. A couple of weeks later, decided that the Arabs are going to win, and then they went on the side of the Arabs. And at that stage, they started. This was already that Monday, the 6th of June, or the 5th of June, 5th of June, whatever it was. That's that Monday when they started. They started bombarding from East Jerusalem, Mount Scopus, and so on. Amon Hatziv, what is Amon Hatziv? High Commissioner's castle, right from that area, anyway. But there was these 3 weeks from Yom HaAtzmaut till the actual time that the war broke out. There were the 3 weeks where it looked like total annihilation of the Jews. That's what the Arabs were saying. They're going to finish off the job which the... Do you follow? The Pasha annihilate the Jews, either massacre them all or throw them into the sea. It basically means to massacre them all. And the Americans are already starting evacuating their citizens. They were evacuating certainly the non-Jewish Americans out here. They sent the 6th Fleet. Do you know what the 6th Fleet is? Have you heard of the American 6th Fleet? You heard of the 6th Fleet? In fact, they're in the Mediterranean. Now part of the 6th Fleet is in the Persian Gulf, I might as well tell you, because of Iran. Okay? But they're the famous 6th Fleet, the American 6th Fleet. They're very big aircraft carriers. You know what an aircraft carrier is, where they've got aircraft on their ship? Big, big thing. And they're evacuating their citizens. And everyone was certain that this is the end of Israel. And Israel was trying to get America. In those days it was, who was it? In those days it was Lyndon Johnson. To come on, you signed an agreement that you support Israel if Egypt went against the armistice at, you know, the sign. You forced us to leave Sinai with a promise that you'd... And nothing was happening in the United Nations. Nothing was happening. The kids said nothing was happening. And it was looking that it was total disaster. Total disaster. That's what it looked like. The only ones who were confident were the Israeli soldiers. But not all of them. Not all of them. It looked like total disaster. In fact, even a guy who was actually a hero like Ben Gurion, you know that? Ben Gurion in the War of Independence, he was like, Ben Gurion has guts. You know what guts is? And omits. You know what guts? Omits. He knew how to take a decision. And when Rabin went to visit Ben Gurion, you know, Rabin was the, he said Rabin was the commanding chief of the Israeli army in those days, just before the, during the Six-Day War. And Rabin went to get some encouragement from Ben-Gurion. went down to stay Boker. And Ben Gurion started shouting at him that why aren't you digging more graves and turn the football stadiums into Batei Kvarot, into cemeteries? Dig more graves. Why not? Can't you go dig tens of thousands of graves? Anyway, so Rabin, that's when he had a bit of a nervous breakdown. That's Rabin? That famous. Yeah, that's that famous nervous breakdown that Hazel Weizmann spoke about. As he came back, he was half dead from nicotine poisoning anyway. He was smoking about 3 packs, 4 packs, 5 packs of cigarettes. He was going mad. And he went to Ben Gurion to get some encouragement. And Ben Gurion started shouting at him, what are you trying? This is crazy. Ben Gurion was who had guts in the war of India. Anyway, that was the situation, more or less. And the Jews all over the world, they started getting so worried. And a new lesson, there's going to be another Holocaust here. And they started sending started volunteering to come to Eretz Yisrael. They never made it on time, by the way. By the time they got here, it was over. I know that. The time they got here, it was over. They started organizing. And like everything, they started that also going berserk. They knew that Israel would need money for ammunition, so they started selling their cars and life insurance policies and everything to send money to Israel, because they knew they needed it. You know, war costs money, costs a fortune. Anyway, and the Jews all over the world were waking up. All of a sudden, those Jews in America, those assimilated Jews, were shaken. You know, they're shaken like this. And the parents were already sending their kids like tickets to come back to wherever they came from. No, like to America. And so I also got tickets like that. My parents, Zichronam Livracha, also sent me a ticket. They didn't know that I was already mobilized. Because on that night, Yom HaAtzmaut. Motzei Yom HaAtzmaut. Right, that's when Nasa and Atadu and Yom HaAtzmaut moved into the Sinai. And Motzei Yom HaAtzmaut, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I was at Merkaz. I was living at Merkaz. I was in the dormitories. At 2 o'clock at night, when they came from the army, I had the guys coming and bringing me at Tzav Shmoneh. What's it, Tzav Shmoneh? Tzav Shmoneh is like, what do you call it? You mobilize, right? Tzav Shmoneh is, how did you translate that? You don't have to.
It's a draft. It's an instant draft. Yeah, this draft. Minute, you have to show up.
Yeah, show up this minute. Anyway, so I was really mobilized anyway. That night. They sent me a ticket also, but you know, I didn't use it. It was very good I had that ticket. So I wanted to tell you a little anecdote that you know, I was already going dating my wife, and we already decided that we'd get engaged, but I was scared of getting engaged because I had no money. I was a yeshiva bocher. The yeshiva bocha. Well, I was learning with Rav Tzviuda Kook, and I didn't have time to work or anything. I didn't have money for an engagement ring. I didn't want to ask my parents. It didn't look nice. Well, I didn't feel like asking. But when they sent me the ticket, then, so I went and sold that ticket back to El Al, and sold El Al the ticket and got my money back. And I got the money to buy an engagement. That's how I got it. Anyway, otherwise I was really scared of getting engaged. I didn't have money. Anyway, I could have got the parents to give me. It wasn't nice. All right, anyway. So that's what was happening. That was the situation. But I might just tell you, it was very good there. The friendliness, the unity amongst the people. They knew they were facing a terrible situation. They're working like everyone, chilonim, datim, charedim, everyone working, filling up like sort of, I don't know, let's say, digging trenches around the hospitals and making these sandbags, you know, against shooting, you know, sandbags or, you know, like all these things. And everyone was yatra, the thing that was very, the atmosphere was so great in Eretz Yisrael itself, and any soldier, that you find a soldier that, and then you have all these people come with sandwiches and drinks, like if you were, anyway. Because, so anyway, that was the famous 3 weeks of Hamtana, but people were scared, all over they were scared. The soldiers were confident, except for a few, like, I told you, Rabbi, was the commanding chief, wasn't so confident. But anyway, finally when the war did break out, I've got to tell you that this was Pashut. Everyone is expecting, everyone is saying this is the end of his army. You get the situation more or less. It looked like the end. It looked like the end. You had Egypt there, you had, and I remember they started television in those days, and I watched the television, and you looked at these Egyptian soldiers like, marching, but force marching on the spot. You know what I mean? Like running on the spot. Looked, I don't know, they were on drugs. I don't know. They looked like totally berserk. They're shouting, they're going to slaughter all the Jews. Did you follow? Slaughter all the Jews. And this force like running on the spot, like a force march. I'm not seeing this. It looked like crazy. They looked like berserk. All of them. All of them. And like hundreds of thousands. Anyway. That's what it looked like. But but in Eretz Yisrael there was in Eretz Yisrael people were scared. Soldiers weren't scared because they're young. They weren't scared. You know how it usually works, huh? Young just don't know they got next year. But they weren't scared. But the guys at the top weren't so confident. I told you, Rabin was. Maybe as a vice man, you had a few people that were confident. Arik Sharon, Ariel Sharon, okay, I was not scared of anything anyway. But, okay, I might as well tell you that the one, just on that Yom HaTzimut night, and I see you just start talking about getting Yerushalayim back, before Nasser moved into Sinai. There was a big talk, you know, with these loudspeakers, at Merkaz Rav, and he says, where is Yerushalayim? Everyone's forgotten Yerushalayim. And they started waking the people up to Yerushalayim. And at that time, you've got a famous song, which was probably the famous song in all of Israeli history. Have you heard of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav? You heard of that? By the way, where does it come from, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav? Yerushalayim of gold. That was a gift which Rabbi Akiva gave his wife, Rachel, because she let him go to study or supported him for. Or encouraged him to go and study. So they made a golden diadem with Yerushalayim. You know, the picture of Yerushalayim on it. That's the famous Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. That's where it comes from. By the way, Rabban Gamliel's wife got a little bit envious. And she said that to Rabban Gamliel, why don't you take a look at Rabbi Akiva's wife? It's a beautiful ornament. You remember Rabbi Akiva, his wife? He was one of the, more or less, he would have remained an Amaris. Anyway, so Rabbi Gamliel's wife got a little bit envious. She said, why don't I get the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav? So I said, Rabbi Gamliel, if you let me go now and study the amount of years that Rabbi Akiva's wife allowed him to go and study, you'll get a golden. You'll get one. And you shall be this. Anyway. That's and that was sort of caught on, and I started waking up all the people, Yerushalayim. And as the Kuzari says, you know what? You only get Yerushalayim if you really learn for it. You really yearn for Yerushalayim. How does the Kuzari go? Let's see the Kuzari right at the end. You remember that? You only get Yerushalayim, you only get, well, it's a sound Yerushalayim if you really yearn for it. Right at the end, the end of the Kuzari, the king asks the sage. King asks the sage, when are you going to get Yerushalayim back? So he says, you know what? That's when they really want it back. Then they'll get it. As it says in the Kumush Nimav, Atatakum Trachem Tzion. You know that, right? Ki eto chanana ki vamuhayt. Ki ratzu avadech et avanea. When your servants, Hashem's servants, want the stones of Yerushalayim, the afarah and the afarah echonenu, the dust of Yerushalayim. כי ירושלים אמנם תיבנה כשיחשפו בני ישראל בתכלית הכיסוף. With Yerushalayim will be rebuilt and begotten and be rebuilt when they really wanted what is b'tachlit ha-kisuf. Tachlit really wanted back. So what happened over here was now they started, I don't know, this was like a magic song. It's a small little thing. You know, the song, it's like small. You think a song is like, what is a song? It's rubbish. Nachon? Small little thing, what? Who cares? No, but it electrified that little song. Sometimes a small little thing can change the whole thing. Change the whole mood of the nation. They wanted Yerushalayim back and they're not Tzura before. And when the people finally went into the war, into the Six-Day War, they were singing Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, all the soldiers. All right, I'm just telling you a little bit of that. I'm giving you a bit of background. Then on the Monday morning, this was a Monday morning, the Monday morning, what day in June? Is it the 5th or the 6th of June, whatever? It's the 5th of June, if you want it. Then, we go up in the morning, quite early, and I'll tell you personally, from my point of view, I was in a place called Hulda. Hulda, in other words, it wasn't regular soldiers. It was soldiers Zachlamim, together with the tank brigade. Do you follow us? What do you call that? Motorized brigade. In fact, the famous motorized brigade that you see the name as you go past Mevaseret, Harael, Chativa Harael or Chativa Eser, the 10th brigade. And by the way, The guy in charge of Chativa Eser in those days was a guy by the name... Am I telling too many stories?
No, that's what we came for.
There's a guy by the name of Uri Ben-Ari who'd been kicked out of the army. Uri Ben-Ari was a genius. Genius as a soldier, very brave and a genius and so on. And he'd been kicked out of the army by Ben-Gurion. He was kicked out because he didn't report that some of his soldiers were looting, you know, after they'd taken... Ritzuat Aza, they'd taken, what is Ritzuat Aza? The
Gaza Strip.
Gaza Strip in the Sinai campaign. He covered up for his soldiers. He didn't report them. Or didn't court-martial them. So Ben Gurion heard of that and he just kicked him out. Anyway, then he begged before the Six-Day War to be pleased, allowed to come back. They allowed him to come back and he was in charge of Chativa Eser and I was in that Chativa Eser. Anyway, we were in a place known as Hulda. Hulda is a forest because forest you want to camouflage the tanks and so on. You know what I mean? It's good camouflage. Tanks and we just got the news early in the morning already. This must have been about 6:45 that the Air Force had already wiped out, and that was a tremendous thing. That was the most tremendous thing going. That they wiped out almost the whole of the Egyptian Air Force. In about half an hour, and the Syrian Air Force and Jordanian Air Force in about half an hour, they'd wiped it out, which was fantastic. I mean, that no one's ever done that before, and that's tremendous. I mean, but the way they did it, the way they planned it, and they were already fighting in Sinai and in Yerushalayim. We got the news, the Jordanians were bombarding Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim, as you know, was in a curfew. You know what a curfew is? Total dark. You know, no one was walking in the streets. Anyway, and then, so all right, as soon as we heard that, then we started moving towards Yerushalayim, and we started coming up to Yerushalayim. And when we were coming through Yerushalayim, you didn't see a living soul. Everyone was in the air raid shelters. Do you follow? They were being bombarded. They were... I told you, the Jordanians were very close. A few kilometers, you got these. Yeah. Total bombardment there. And anyway, that's when I started coming to Yerushalayim. And the soldiers, being young, didn't know what great danger the whole business was. Do you follow? All the soldiers did, but the youngsters... They didn't know, like me at my that age, I didn't know what was. I just finished the army, and this is my first miluim, my first, what is miluim? You know what miluim is? Yeah, the first miluim, I know what. Anyway, Bekitsa, to cut a long story short, you know, came through, the Jerusalem Brigade were being bombarded, and then we came through, and I remember Uli Ben Ari saying to the guys, the officers of the Jerusalem Brigade, Bachman, move your rubbish out of the way, let's go and do a proper job. Let move your equipment, man. And they went in, and they did the job, sort of conquering, you know, this side, going round by Mount Scopus Way. Actually, they didn't go. I was by Mount Scopus side, although you had also Tzanchanim over there. You also had the Tzanchanim, the
paratroopers.
And I remember this Hanan Porat told me. There's a very great guy called Hanan Porat, a good friend of mine, passed away. Rav Hanan Porat Zatzal. And he told me that, well, while we were taken with the armored, you know, we were conquering the, because we had tanks and half tracks and so on. And we were moving around, we did a lot of moving. But he was at a place called Augusta Victoria. Augusta Victoria was on, it's there by the commissioners, just by Mount Scopus, close to Mount Scopus. And Augusta Victoria, we couldn't bombard that place. Why? Because it's a monastery. And being a monastery, then, they have the whole of the Christian world against us if we bombard. But there were Jordanians firing from the monastery. They don't care whether it's a monastery or not. And anyway, so that you have hand-to-hand fighting. That's the only way to take it. They couldn't get our support. We could have given them good support, you know, because they had tanks and things. Couldn't give them any support because couldn't bombard. So they had to do it hand by hand, and they had people, let's say, from Hashomer HaTzair. You know what Hashomer HaTzair is? What is Hashomer HaTzair? Like the communist youth. Now, going into battle hand-to-hand is not easy. It's quite scary, I might as well tell you. And they have these little, like, kartisim that the army gave out to the Chayalim before going into Krav. Little, tefillot before going into battle. Little cards, like you got tefillat ha-derech. And everyone got them. And then the communist youth came up quickly to guys like Hanan Pura and asked them, tell me, we want a daven. How do you do it? How do you daven? Anyway, the kids. Anyway, and then, this was a tremendous thing. The world went mad. I might as well tell you, the world went mad. I still got, but I can't get them down now. But I've got magazines. I got some magazines from those days, but not the early, the first week. The world went mad. You know, it went mad. They'd never seen a thing like this before. That in these 6 days, just defeated 14 Arab armies. In the south, and this and that, and all over this, the world went mad. In fact, by the way, first of all, there was fighting in the Sinai against Egypt. There was against Jordan. Against Syria, not so much, because they didn't know how to take those. And it was very risky to take the Golan Heights. But it wasn't easy. How do you get those Golan Heights? It was very, very fortified. Basically, it was more or less defensive type of fighting over there. It was only on Shabbat, after they really conquered Sinai, which was a fantastic thing. And after they'd conquered to the Jordan, was this over there, to the Jordan, to follow all the area to the Jordan River, and only then, on Lael Shabbat, the decision was made that they go up to Ramat HaGolan. They go to take the Golan Heights. So remember traveling the whole night, the whole of Shabbos night, there was a very nice convoy, getting all the way, going through, I remember Shiloh and these places, till finally we got to Mount Tabor on Shabbos morning. Shabbos morning, then you had all the soldiers. Anyway, then we started going up the Golan Heights. By the way, but when, while we were going up, we already had Golani coming down. Do you follow? Golani had already, you heard of Golani? They'd already taken most of the positions. Anyway, but we went up anyway onto the Golan. This was on Shabbos afternoon. And then remained on the Golan Heights for 6 weeks. 6 weeks to keep the Golan Heights. I was listening to the radio, everyone visiting Yerushalayim and the courtyard and everything. And the only time I saw the Iratika is when I came back. And there was a tremendous reception. Oh, that's how you felt like, you know, having the movies. You know, in the movies. You have like the liberators of Yerushalayim, a tremendous reception. And all the Chativayas and all the 10th Brigade Chativatar. Oh, there was a tremendous reception. The people throwing chocolates and ice creams and everything at the soldiers. Because it was a tremendous Yeshua. You wouldn't believe what a Yeshua it was. It was looked like total Shoah and turned into one of the greatest things going. One of the greatest, I think it was one of the greatest victories. The world went mad. Maybe one day I should have taken them out, but it's in a certain valise, a certain suitcase I've got this in. Maybe I should have shown you these pictures. And they said, they're going mad. The world went mad. They'd never seen a thing like this before. And I was thinking the exact opposite was going to happen. It was tremendous. It was a tremendous... Yeshua, that was the Six Day War. It was a tremendous Yeshua that... Unbelievable, like... From what looked like Choshech, one of the worst moments in Jewish history turned into the best moments, and this you must understand, that sometimes Hashem does things, especially in connection with the Eretz Yisrael, where you have things that look negative, where Hashem has got, Hashem's working it out positive, Hashem never leaves it negative concerning Eretz Yisrael. Gentlemen, you understand what I'm saying? Always to think about that, and even recent Jewish history can understand that as well. See a lot of these things. It looks like negative. Hashem's always got the positive aspect of the whole thing. He's going to turn like look bad, look like annihilation. Hashem turned the whole thing around. You have to draw the get the Arabs believing what they're saying. They're going to annihilate the Jews and then get involved in the war, and then everything changed. And they were believing it. Believing me, the Arabs were believing it, and the world was believing it. One of the greatest Yeshuot. So I might as well tell you, it was and the feeling in Eretz Yisrael was a tremendous feeling. Tremendous feeling. Remember, how many Jews were there in Eretz Yisrael? How many Jews in there? Right, now you've got, let's say, 6 million Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Those days, you had two million. I remember a friend of mine, remember, Israel was on the news all the time now. Because I suppose in America it's always on the news, right? Israel always on the news. And I remember a friend of mine, Mao Tamari. Dr. Tamari. Very interesting fellow. Anyway, worked for the Bank of Israel. Quite a senior position in the Bank of Israel. I mean, we had to go to India to meet the finance minister of India. And anyway, the finance minister, he told me the story, the finance minister of India said to him, tell me, how many Jews are there? How many Jews are there in Eretz Yisrael? So I said, 2 million. He said, no, you're putting my leg. You mean 200 million? Huh? You mean 200 million? Kids, that's what the story was. 2 million Jews. So there were some funny jokes. They used to have some funny jokes there. Like, I tell you this one joke, but I shouldn't tell you jokes too much. I shouldn't dream. But I'll tell you this joke that the one officer, they tell a joke of a certain platoon in the Salamash. The one officer said to the soldiers, now listen, you go and bring us Egyptian captives. Bring us Egyptian captives. And for every captive, you get a lira. A lira is like a shekel. Those days they had lira. Anyway, okay. So I had two friends, one is Chaimke and the other one Shmulik. They go out there into the Sinai Desert. They're walking around. And the night they set up the little pup tent. You know these little pup tents? Set up the little pup tent at night. And they start hearing a tremendous noise. Tremendous noise. A lot of machinery. And they don't know what it is. And they're very tired and they sleep. And there's a tremendous racket going on. Anyway, Chaimke gets up early in the morning, wants to go to do the Tilat Yadayim. Gets up. He says that in the middle of the Egyptian army, that during the night, the whole of the Egyptian army had come around them. And he quickly wakes up his friend. Shmuley, Shmuley, get up, man. Come and take a look. We're millionaires. anyway, that's one of the jokes. Listen, all right. Listen, I don't want to hold you too long, but it was a tremendous issue. It was a tremendous issue. Unbelievable. In fact, yeah, a tremendous issue. No one believed that. The world never believed the thing. They never believed it. I'd never seen a thing like this. And I expected this is the end of the Jews. That's it. So this is what we're coming to, Yom Yerushalayim. And I might as well tell you, everyone was talking about the big nice, Datiim, Chiloniim, everyone. And afterwards, you know, people started thinking or started saying different. It was only after the beginning, every Chiloni spoke about the miracle. Afterwards, they started saying, well, Israel's got very small generals. Mm. Do you follow? Then it started changing. Mm. It was, I forgot the great Nisi. Okay. Anyway, gentlemen, why would you say that it was only in the Six-Day War that they got to Yerushalayim? Why not, let's say, in the War of Independence? By the way, the War of Independence, everything went wrong in Yerushalayim. Everything went wrong. They couldn't get to Yerushalayim. They couldn't. Most of the troops they sent to Yerushalayim and they couldn't take Yerushalayim. In fact, the day before the big assault on the old city, everything seemed to be just going crazy. General Marcus was shot, was killed. The day before the big assault. Everything was going wrong. So, I've seen an explanation. That you know, yeah, you've got that in the War of Independence. Tell me, was the Israeli army united really, or did you have maybe Haganah, Etzel? There wasn't really unity, nachon? The War of the Six-Day War, they were really united and very well united. And yeah, you've got, let's say when David goes to take Yerushalayim, you know, they never took Yerushalayim until the time of David. David went to conquer Yerushalayim. So here you've got the Radak. Listen to this Radak. Radak is one of the Rishonim that commentate. It says like this. Yeah, it says, V'ilach HaMelech V'anashavi, now it's David, after became king of all Israel. So he went now with the people. In Divrei Amim it says, Ko V'chol Yisrael. Divrei Amim V'ilach David V'chol Yisrael. This is the Radak. One of the Rishonim. You they know the Radak, right? No. One of them. Really going back how many years? 600 years, 700 years. The Divraimim, Vailach David, Kol Yisrael. Kol Yisrael, Ayuata, Anashav. Now, after the king became king of all Israel, now he went to take Yerushalayim. So, why? Why? Because there was a tradition. It says there was a tradition. Shaitan Kabbalah Islam. There was a Kabbalah, there was a tradition. Kitzion Rosh Mamlechet Yisrael, that Zion, Zion, the head of the kingdom of Israel, Veloi Lakodata Elamishi Yemelech Al Kol Yisrael. The only one who could conquer it would be a king of all of Israel. And as Am Yisrael is united. So, it's very possible that during the, and this I think I saw in the Sefer, by Rav Tzvi Moshe Neri. I think in his Sefer he mentions this. I think so. It fits in. He doesn't bring this Radak, but it's the idea. Maybe he does. The idea is that when Am Yisrael is united, they get Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is Klal Yisraeli. What do we say about Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim Abnuya Ki'ir Shechubra LaYachdav. And according to the Yerushalmi, Chubra LaYachdav, Yerushalayim unites all Israel. So you've got all Israel together, then you've got a chance of taking Yerushalayim. And this was when the nation was had this common, as I told you, woken up to the fact that they want Yerushalayim, they got it, and united in that thing. United much more than in time before, even after. For nowadays you've already got people speaking about dividing Yerushalayim. You know, you've got certain, you know what's going on with politics. You know, certain people don't know what they're talking about, and they speak about dividing Yerushalayim, you know what I mean? They don't even know what you say. All right. Anyway, Rabutai, you wanted some Dvar Halacha, or the boys are hungry? Huh? The boys are hungry, nachon?
Are we going to have another opportunity you know to hear the Rav?
And we're hungry for some Dvar...
There we go. We're hungry for some Torah.
Ah, all right. So let's just quickly...
I just want to tell the Rav that they also have questions they want to ask.
Ah.
That could take.
I'll tell you what. You know what? Yeah, you've got. Rav Netanya asked me to prepare something on like patents or like copying.
They want to know if they could copy computer programs, discs of music.
Yeah. Now let me tell you. Let's say I'm reading now from the Shulchan Aruch. Okay. You know, there's something, what is known, is the ownership of something which is not tangible? That's the question. Is the ownership? If there's ownership, then it's theft. If there's no ownership, then it's not theft. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, can you transfer something? Can you are we talking about transferring something which is not tangible? Let's say I'll sell you the smell of this apple. Or I'll sell you the standing at this spot. I'll sell you the right to stand on this spot.
What about a formula? Sell you the formula.
Right. I'm kind of. So I sell you the right to stand over here, to sit here. Does that take effect? Is the sale a sale? I'm selling something intangible. I'm selling you the right to stand here, right to sit here. Doesn't take effect. It's not a kinyan.
Or even if it's your property?
Even if it's your property, you've got to word it different. How do you word it? You don't say, well, I'm like say people renting an apartment. You don't say, or you don't write down, I'm renting you the right to live in this apartment or the living in this apartment. I'm renting you the apartment to live in. I've got you the kinyan has got to be something tangible. Do you follow what I'm saying? In other words, so this is the halacha. And Adam, listen to this. I'm cutting it short because now we're running late. But Rashi bet, and as a Shulchan Aruch, and Adam makne lo b'mechev lo b'matana. A person can't transfer, neither by sale, neither by gift. And the davar sheyesh bo mamash, and it's something which is tangible. A davar she'ein bo mamash, but something intangible, and unikne. You cannot transfer. It's not transferable. Let's say, for instance, I'm transferring to you, making a kinyan, making the right to divide this property. The right to divide the property is nonsense, according to what we say. Lefichah machne lechaviru achilat peirot dekelzi. If you sell your friend the eating of the fruit of this palm tree, or the living in this house, nothing is done. Until he transfers to him, he sells him the house, I'm renting you the house to live in. Or I'm renting you or selling you the tree to have the fruit. Throw it. But you've got to have something tangible. Do you follow? In other words, if it's untangible, The cell doesn't take place. That's the halakha. Now, to cut a long story short, okay, if no cell takes place, in other words, you can't sell it, so what? Is the ownership on something intangible? Lichorana? In other words, you can't transfer it. There's no ownership on something intangible.
If you can't transfer it, means you can't have ownership on it?
Not necessarily, always. Not necessarily, you're making a good point of view, but if you're saying that no kinyan, there's no kinyan, we're using the language, there's no kinyan, there's no acquisition or transaction or something intangible, I understand what you're saying. Maybe there could be a situation which remains with the person.
I have a right to tell someone not to stand in my yard.
Yeah.
But I can't sell him that right.
You can't sell him that right. So you want to say that what? It's still your yard. Yeah, it's his yard. He's transferred.
It's a right I have in my yard, even though I can't sell that right.
No, you've got the right to. Yeah, this is my thing, and this is like you using my yard without permission.
But I can't sell that use. Right?
You can sell the yard for the use.
Okay.
Yeah. You can sell the yard for the use. But yeah, you're telling the person, you are using my yard without permission. It's my yard. And you're using it. You're not allowed to use it without my permission. Because it's my yard. And use comes with, if you acquire the yard, you get the use.
I could tell them you're not allowed to look into my house, right?
Maybe.
Hezekiah.
Maybe. Question is if Hezekiah is Hezek or not.
The question is
if Hezekiah, the two English are not in the garden. Okay. Anyway.
Say into the vegetable garden.
Huh?
Say into the vegetable garden.
Yeah, so the question if Hezekiah.
Shmei Hezek or Shmei Hezek?
Yeah.
Okay, but we say Shmei Hezek.
Yeah, but if you're damaging the fellow. Maybe
we should talk about this on our own.
Some other time. Okay. Yeah. Some other time. Above the butter afterwards. No, it's all right. Don't worry. It's a Shabbos. No, it's all right. Now, work along these lines. If you can't transfer it, question is the ownership. Is there theft of it? Well, let's say there'd be ownership, but is there theft of it? Is that classified as theft? You can't transfer it. So what says it's theft? You know, do I own it fully? That's the question. Yeah, you've got in this Pitrei Tshuva, he brings a marshal. I'll just show you what the marshal is. This is the Shuta Marshal. Marshal? Okay, you must probably know the name, the marshal. From in the Gemara, you've got the Marshal. Nachon, under the Marshal. So the Marshal says, you know what? He's got a different question. A person bought the right, Zikayon?
Right.
A person bought the, what is a Zikayon in English?
Privilege.
The privilege to sell wine. He bought from the government the
license.
The
license.
The license. He bought the license to sell Yash. What is Yash? Vodka. Vodka. He got the license in this town to sell vodka. He paid for it. Another guy comes and opens up. He's also selling vodka. The question is there a concept of theft? Yeah. You know, so I bought the right to sell vodka, paid the government the money for the right to sell vodka. Did I buy it? All right. The Chorah didn't buy it. So if it's not tangible, there's no transaction. Right? So comes along the Marshal and he says, you know what? There's two things. There's what is known as two very important halakhic issues. One is Dina de Malkuta Dina. What is Dina de Malkuta Dina? The law. Of the land is law. If that's the law of the land, you follow the law of the land. Fair law. It's a fair law. As long as it's a fair law, you follow it. You've got to follow the law of the land. The second thing, he says you have what is known as kinyan situmta. I haven't got time now, and you boys haven't got time. But if you look up in Ayin Dalet, well, in Reish Aleph, you know what? In the Choshen Mishpat, yeah, this was Reish Yudbet. In Reish Aleph, you'll have what is known as kinyan. It's a small siman. You have what is known as kinyan situmta. Situmta, let's say we'll translate as a kinyan, a form of transaction, which is a very small siman. Yeah. It's a form of transaction which the tagari, which the merchants adopted. They invented a form of handshake. It's in the diamond business. Do you know how they sell diamonds? How do they sell diamonds? How did you sell diamonds, Michal? How did you sell diamonds in your youth? In your youth, what did you used to do? Handshake. So I give a handshake, it's a mazel brocha. They give the handshake and they say, Mazal Bracha. They say, Mazal Bracha. After that handshake, if you want to back down on it, can you back down on it? No, man, you back. No one will ever deal with you again. No one, that's the deal. You sold it. That's the way it's done. That's Kinyan Situmta. So says the Marshal, second reason. That's the custom of the tagarim, of the merchants. You buy, there's a license to sell. So it might be that right, without that custom of the merchants, without the law of the land, nachon, it could be that it wouldn't be theft. But now that you've got these two things, that's classified as theft. Do you follow? If a guy bought a license to sell the vodka, and someone else comes and starts selling vodka, he is stealing from the guy who bought the license.
If it's the law of the land, though.
Or for this reason, or for this reason.
Okay.
So, if you sleep in a hotel room without paying for the hotel room, is that stealing?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
No, but it's not.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's either because it's the law of the land, or because that's the accepted custom of the merchant.
And if
that
everyone
turns it into law.
If everyone's copying, if throughout the country
copying,
everyone's using Word and Windows without license.
Now, I might as well tell you, there's one thing that maybe you can copy. No, it's not really. It's not really. It's yes and no. You can copy. It's something else. There's something else. When it comes to, like, there are two things. I don't get too much involved, but when you're copying Torah, let's say you've got a book, someone deposited a book with you, a sefer. You can copy. You can copy that sefer. You're going to learn from it? Torah. But this is mentioned by Torah, there's something, because the person deposited it with you, you being a Talmid Chacham Bachurei Yeshiva, knowing that you gave it for this purpose. So you've got a deen like that over here, that, right? You can't just go around reading the books, like if you sealed a book. You gave a book, like sealed, you can't just open it up and read it. It asks you to look after it. Now, there's a deen over here that Suli Krot, right? And unless he gave it to a Talmid Chacham without being sealed, do you follow? So he understood that the person's going to read it and is allowed to copy it. Do you follow? He's allowed to copy it also. But that's copying that cipher. He's allowed to copy it.
Rather, this applies to...
All right, it'll take down the value of the cipher. How will it take down the value of the sefer? Remember those days, how did they have svarim?
Scrolls.
Handwritten, this is going way back. So they had to handwritten. So obviously by you copying, then it's not so rare anymore, that sefer. So the value's gone down, but you're allowed to. This is for learning Torah. Sadia, special letter for learning Torah. But, right there, although... you've got to bear in mind this with something else. And that is that if a person spent all his money on the printing, that's another thing. You can't start competition and print. You follow and start selling when he hasn't... All right, I'm going to get into all that. Basically, do you understand? A heter for Torah.
Does that apply to audio CDs? To CDs of Torah?
Yeah, it could be. Unless the guy says he doesn't want you to copy them. He says, befeirish.
Unless the person... The,
no, because now we're working on the assumption that the guy... It could be a little bit more about than that. But basically on the assumption that the guy doesn't mind. He doesn't mind having a mitzvah done with his property.
That means the person who's on the rabbi on the audio CD, that he doesn't mind that if it's duplicated and distributed.
Usually, you don't have to ask for permission.
Okay.
But let's say they state outright that they don't want it. Well, according to the one commentator, Avia, then you can't copy. Do you follow? The other Zavir, the Shach, says you can copy because it comes to Divrei Torah, you can do that.
Sure.
All right. Gentlemen, I think that'll be enough. You've got to go and have your pizza, and I've got to go for Maariv. You've done in Maariv, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've got to go for Maariv.
Can the gentleman have a few minutes to ask questions?
I'd prefer going to Maariv.
Okay.
Okay.
So when are we going to have another opportunity?
Gentlemen, you come some other time, beside you.
Okay.
It's been a pleasure meeting you, and you've got a great drum. Rav Netanya will some other time.
Okay, good. That's great. That's the best thing we could have heard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because we plan on taking the Rav up on it.
Okay, you
next time, maybe it's better in the Machon. Maybe we'll get I didn't want to trouble the Rav.
No, it's beside Rav, yeah. Of course, that was much more comfortable for me.
I feel bad.
No, I had this fire and everything.
Okay.
No, I don't feel bad about it.